Let's all
stay involved online this semester with CJSF, SFU's independent campus community radio station. From writing album reviews to producing video and audio, there are many ways you can volunteer remotely for CJSF.
Be the media.
I'm wondering how to start volunteering for CJSF.
Well, simply sign up online and go to cjsf.ca/signup. Or contact our volunteer coordinator, Noel, at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. That is vol4cjsf@sfu.ca. For more information on how to become a CJSF volunteer, as well as the latest on new volunteer orientations and volunteer opportunities at CJSF.
CJSF 90.1.
It's diverse, independent, and yours.
Last time I talked to John Tory was December 11th, 2017, at the annual holiday party held by the Toronto City Hall Press Gallery. At that point, I'd been at Canada Land for not quite a year, having left the municipal beat to cover the glamorous world of Canadian media instead. Tory asked if I was enjoying it, and I responded with something to the effect of, "I don't think anyone in media is enjoying themselves these days. Well, except for the folks at BuzzFeed." And even more than the blank look on the mayor's face, I recall what it was like to look in from the outside on BuzzFeed at the time. It was the one place in the news industry where people seemed genuinely happy and deeply proud of themselves, their work, their colleagues, and their brand. Think of like Vice at its peak, but more wholesome and better paying. BuzzFeed's Canadian unit, based in Toronto, on the next block over from Canada Land, was no exception. I mean, they once did a live stream from the office of something they called a capybara pool party.
Okay. Hi everyone, we have Mrs. Willow, capybara, who's in our office today. So we have a nice little pool for her, we have a beach ball. Ah, we got some snacks. This is the best day of our lives.
BuzzFeed is still around. BuzzFeed Canada is even still technically around with lists, quizzes, generic lifestyle content, sponsored posts from the Ottawa Tourism Authority, etc. But at the start of May, BuzzFeed News closed for good, publishing as its final article an ultimate oral history of itself. When I first clicked through to that piece, I was really happy to see the collage at the top included pics of a number of the Canadians who made a name for themselves there, like Craig Silverman, El-Amin Abdul-Mahmoud, and Sachi Cole. But the piece itself, despite running nearly 12,000 words, offered just passing mentions of Canada. Because, you know, like, I figured that if the bright, brief life of BuzzFeed News was a microcosm of the whole past, present, and future of media collapsed into the span of like a single supercharged decade, then their Canadian offshoot was a microcosm of that, blazing through a similar rise and fall in just a fraction of the time. Perhaps it wasn't surprising that a news outlet that was strapped onto a business model premised on catching trends and riding waves would itself crest and crash in quick succession. But still, I wanted to know, how did something so seemingly wonderful get built up so fast? And what was it like for those on the inside watching it slip away? So I found two people who were there at the beginning and almost at the end. Wait for it. So I guess could you each start by introducing yourself?
Hello, my name is El-Amin Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm the number one Craig Silverman fan. That's my main job.
I'm Craig Silverman, and my job is pleasing El-Amin Abdul-Mahmoud. And when I don't do that, I work as a reporter at ProPublica, and I'm the former founding editor of BuzzFeed Canada.
Oh, I should have said that part, hey? I used to work at BuzzFeed Canada, first as a social media editor, and then a news curation editor, and then lastly as a culture writer. So I moved through a few different roles at BuzzFeed News. Now I host a show on CBC.
So, Craig, you started in the spring of 2015 as BuzzFeed Canada's founding editor. Tell me, how was it founded?
First of all, BuzzFeed Canada was different from any other international edition that BuzzFeed had ever done. They were already in Brazil, they were in the UK, they were in Australia. All of those places started with what internally we refer to as buzz, which is lists and quizzes, nothing to do with news, just like viral content people can relate to and want to share. Every other international place started with that. In Canada, because BuzzFeed was already, I think, a top 10 news media site in Canada,
Without having a presence here.
Without having any editorial people here. We had salespeople here already. The idea was, well, maybe we should launch with news in Canada as well as hiring some dedicated Canada Buzz people. And so we were really unique in that respect. Everything about BuzzFeed Canada was different from other internationals because there was already revenue, never had happened in any other place. We were already a top 10 site. We were going to start with news. And so all of that made it a very different kind of experiment. And so we were going to hire some dedicated Buzz people, you know, one really to start. And then we were going to hire some news people. And because Ben Smith was a news guy and because we had a federal election coming in Canada in the fall of 2015, Ben was of the view, let's hire some political reporters.
Get some scoops.
Let's get some scoops. And also because one of the reasons Ben even took the job at BuzzFeed is because he was told that, look, every U.S. presidential election cycle can birth a new news organization. And you guys, he was told back then, you have a chance to break BuzzFeed and social, you know, political reporting in that. And so Ben took that lesson and said, you know, we have a chance to break BuzzFeed Canada in the course of this federal election. So when I was initially saying, I don't know if we should hire politics right away, why don't we start slow and see and go from there? They were like, no, we got to have people in Ottawa. We got to be there for the election. And so we had a mix of news. We had a mix of Buzz. And we were sort of kicking off with that, unlike any other place BuzzFeed had done.
For each of you, what was the first occasion you can recall hearing about BuzzFeed?
I think really the first time I cared about it and noticed it was probably when they hired Ben Smith as editor-in-chief. So I probably wasn't paying attention to BuzzFeed when it was the sort of content lab being run by Jonah Peretti. But when they hired Ben Smith, who had been a political blogger at Politico, because I had come from the sort of old-school blogging world, I was like, oh, what is Ben Smith doing at this place that does weird lists and quizzes and internet ephemera? They're going to try to do news sort of thing, which was a lot of people's reaction at the time.
William, what about for you? But the same, probably? Or
probably same era. I don't know if it was the same, necessarily, same instigator, but, like, my job before BuzzFeed was I worked as a social media producer at TVO. And just in terms of looking in that universe of, like, okay, there's this whole new world of social media, of every newsroom is hiring a bunch of people who were trying to make their news work on social media, and that's a different skill set than making it work on your website, whatever that might be. And BuzzFeed was kind of the best in class at the time. And it was this, like, very specific moment of, hey, the news is migrating to social media.
Yeah.
Soon time, we're not going to even be going to websites. We're going to be getting all of our news entirely directly on the feed. And BuzzFeed was the place I was sort of doing the most experimentation with that. And so to me, like, that's how they came across my radar the first time.
Yeah, I mean, BuzzFeed started as, like, as Ben Smith describes in his new book, as like a skunkworks for HuffPost, kind of. Like, Jonah Peretti did this as, like, a side project to figure out what is trending. But originally, what was trending on Google, and then later, what was trending on Facebook. And after they finally sort of got that figured out in 2011, he hired Ben Smith at the end of the year, at end of 2011, started what was then BuzzFeed Politics and became BuzzFeed News.
Realistically, most people heard about BuzzFeed through the immortal words, what colors are this dress?
Yeah, what was it, black and blue or white and gold? Like, the internet was tearing itself apart trying to reach a conclusion.
Like, that was, like, kind of the moment where, okay, this company is doing things beyond its very specific sort of internet corner scope. It just kind of felt like it graduated to a new level. Okay, now everybody kind of knows about this.
Okay. No, I guess so, yeah. That was early 2015, January, February 2015,
it was,
I believe.
And I remember I was in New York on the day of, not just the dress day, but that was also the day, I believe, it was llamas were somewhere loose
That's
in the
right.
United States.
That's
and
right.
It's been memorialized as, like, you know, the best day on the internet or whatever. And I was in New York and was running, like, a research project around virality and veracity at the time, and was, like, walking around. I visited some journalism profs at CUNY and other places, and I remember just talking to one journalism prof at CUNY who was, we were looking at the llama stuff being like, oh, my God, this is so hilarious. This is such great content. And it was BuzzFeed was at the center of all that. And I do remember also meeting with, I think, Jay Rosen from NYU, another sort of, like, future of journalism blogging guru. And we talked about how BuzzFeed seemed to have a bundle. And what we meant by that was newspapers were amazing businesses mm-hmm. because they had a bundle where it was like, yeah, there was news, but also you had classified ads and you had listings. And then there was, you know, all of these sort of cultural reporting. There were crosswords. There were comics. That was a bundle that came in one package that lots of different people mm-hmm. liked for different reasons and were all willing to pay for.
Yeah.
And the internet splintered the bundle in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, Craigslist became a classified place and took that business away. But BuzzFeed, it seemed like they were building a bundle where they had these lists and these quizzes and those things people wanted. Then they were bundling in news. And then they had, you know, a business model around creating sort of viral content for brands. And it's sort of that conversation that day was, it looks like BuzzFeed may actually have a viable business model for media. And whoops. Were we wrong?
Turns out you shouldn't base the entirety of the future of media on some llamas and a dress.
Yeah, my bad.
I mean, one thing that I've been thinking about is how it's almost like the entire history of most news organizations or most media organizations all compressed into the span of about a decade, right? Instead of having growing up over decades and then withering away over decades, this all happened over the span of pretty much over 10 years, and BuzzFeed Canada over maybe like the middle portion of that, which is even more compressed.
I should also be careful, I guess, about like doing a full eulogy here. Like BuzzFeed Canada as an entity still exists.
Do they do news? Absolutely not. But yeah, they're producing the classic BuzzFeed content.
Yeah.
And so the thing that was the flash in the pan was the BuzzFeed Canada as a news entity.
That is willing to report on things that are happening here.
Yes.
Whether it's, you know, you had Paul and Emma in Ottawa or Craig doing the tribute to Conrad, the raccoon who died.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P.
Highlight of my life, obviously. I'll never reach that apex again.
What was that, 4 million people?
Yeah, I actually...
3 million people?
Well, I remember the day when that story came out, I remember at one point, Jonathan...
Do you want to tell people what the story was?
Yeah, tell
No, everyone knows what the story is, okay? Excuse me.
So there was this raccoon who died, got run over by a car.
This is the thing, is if you describe it, it's absolutely nothing. So it was one evening when I was editor of BuzzFeed Canada, I would look for sort of stories after my kids went to bed that maybe we could start reporting on and finish the next day or that I could quickly do that night. And so I just noticed on Twitter that people were talking about this dead raccoon on the street in Toronto.
Yeah.
And then somebody had called the city to pick it up, but it had taken hours and hours and hours. And at a certain point, people started putting flowers out there and, you know, memorializing
like a makeshift memorial,
this dead raccoon. And then at one point, as we found out later, some office workers from a nearby building printed off a photo of a raccoon, put it in a frame, brought that down, brought some candles, made a whole nice thing of it. And so I just did what was, you know, a quick sort of easy post that we would do at the time was rounded up the memorial to a dead raccoon.
Yeah.
And
people in Toronto created a memorial to a dead raccoon after the city forgot to pick it up. RIP, hashtag dead raccoon TO.
That was it.
His name was Conrad, right?
I believe they named him. Yeah. And so I think I noticed it because the hashtag was starting to trend, dead raccoon TO. And it was also a beautiful story because, you know, you had the early photos of it and then it starts to grow and it starts to have this sort of viral moment where people are adding more. And so like somebody buys a rose and puts it next to them. There's the photo. Then at one point they print off like a condolences card and left a Sharpie so people could sign. And so and I posted it and it was doing well and I went to bed. It was doing really well, and I woke up, and all shit had...
The entire internet was talking about
it
this
was
dead
crazy.
Raccoon.
Yeah. They were like, because we had a newsroom in Toronto, and our global news director, Lisa Tazi, or we had a newsroom in London, I should say, and our global news director from New York was in London that day. And when I woke up, somebody had already printed off a photo for her of a raccoon and framed it and put it on her desk in London. And so I woke up to that, and at that point, it's like over a million views or whatever.
In a day. It's a perfect example of the kind of story that, like, Global would never do that. You know what I mean? Like, they would just not touch the story. Even if it was gaining traction as, like, here's, like, a little memorial to this raccoon that died. The threshold is different, whereas, like, you were like, why not?
This is
why
obvious for us.
This was
like, the second month of BuzzFeed Canada, and this was, like, a few months after you were hired, and just before you were hired, Elman.
Yeah.
So, just going back a few months, how were you first brought into BuzzFeed, Craig, and how did they decide to set up? Well, what were you told about them?
How did you get the final rose?
Yes. It was, I'm getting kissed on the lips by Ben Smith at the moment. I will never forget. So, my connection with BuzzFeed starts... years before 2015, I was somebody who was blogging about journalistic accuracy, corrections, ethics, boring stuff for the Poynter Institute, which is a journalism kind of training nonprofit. And I was seen as the most knowledgeable person about this obscure area of corrections. Well, how do you correct your errors in journalism? And so BuzzFeed had gone through a bit of a journalistic scandal or issue. And so at one point, Ben and Shawnee, who I think was executive editor or managing editor, had sort of talk to me about if we are going to do corrections, how do we do them or that kind of thing. And so I had given them some advice and then ended up finding out that they had integrated some corrections things into the actual like content management system that you type your articles in. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I'd written a post. And that's how I'd sort of met Ben and Shawnee. And Ben and I had never met before, but I started blogging in 2004. He started blogging for Politico early on. There was a small world. So we sort of knew of each other a little bit. And then we get to about 2014. And I was running a research project looking at the virality of rumors and falsehoods. It was called emergent.info as a website. And I was doing a research fellowship at the Tao Center at Columbia, living in Montreal, and was researching how rumors, whether they turn out to be true or false, spread and how news organizations cover them. My concern was that they were kind of buying the rumor, like writing up the rumor really quickly to get that traffic. And then whether it turned out to be true or false, they just like, ah, I don't care. I got the traffic. So really looking at viral news and some of the negative incentives of that. And one of the things I started doing was I started to do a weekly quiz of like the false stuff that we saw because we were tracking falsehoods. And people at BuzzFeed, I noticed, were like retweeting these quizzes. And like Ben was mentioning it and Lisa Tazi, the global news director, was mentioning it. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. BuzzFeed folks are, because as far as I'm concerned, if I can help people understand about false information through a quiz format, that's a great, appealing way to do it. And all that being said, I mean, at a certain point, you know, Ben reached out, said he thought the project I was running was cool. He said, if you're ever in New York, you know, come by. I'd love to talk to you. And so I was like, oh, I'm in New York next week. I wasn't booked to be in New York next week.
Oh, okay.
And so I booked a flight and went to New York and met with Ben and Lisa and these other people. And we started talking about me doing this kind of debunking of viral stuff for BuzzFeed, which would have involved me probably moving to New York. And this is early 2015. And as we're talking about that and it's starting to get serious, and I'm starting to like the idea, because it's like, well, if you're going to debunk viral garbage, being inside BuzzFeed to see viral stuff early on is a good idea. But at a certain point, Ben said, oh, by the way, we're probably launching in Canada and we'll need an editor. Do you want to throw your hat in for that? And that really appealed to me because the idea was like, wait, I could build a news organization in Canada and hire people and be part of this crazy engine of BuzzFeed. Because, it's early 2015 and BuzzFeed is one of the hottest things in media at the time. No question.
Absolutely.
So that's sort of where it started. And I ended up applying and getting the job.
And how were you brought in, Ellie?
Listen, I'd love to tell you the story, but before we do, I think Craig was being overly humble about his description of working on rumors and viral news, because
this isn't going to make the podcast.
It's got to make the podcast. And the reason it does is like, there's what, three people who started the phrase fake news? You know, like, you're the Steve Wozniak of fake news,
dude. Oh, thank you.
I mean, you want to be Steve Jobs? You can be Steve Jobs if you want to be.
If I have to pick.
Sure.
I was going to get I mean,
I have less of the prick factor, I think, than Steve Jobs, maybe.
But I just mean that we're not a lot of people doing this work.
No,
and so, like, kudos to not just you for doing it before everybody else was like, this is going to become the problem of modern news, but also to Ben for recognizing like, oh, this is going to be an issue, Ben, and investing in that.
Right? I definitely think it is amazing that Ben and Lisa and senior people at BuzzFeed kind of looked at what I was doing, because to your point, I was just a niche weirdo running a small website based on a research project. There were very few people interested in virality and falsehoods.
Does it weird you out now that like, you've birthed a complex.
The one thing I will say about that is, you know, Ben recognized there was something interesting about it in late 2014, early 2015, when nobody else really cared about it. And then a year or so later, in the spring of 2016, when I had been running BuzzFeed Canada, been very focused on Canada, Ben came back to me and said, you should really go back on your debunking beat. Mm. And so this was before really the crazy, true
Trump
craziness.
Trump had barely announced at that point, right?
I mean, he was in. He
June
was
2015,
in.
I think.
Exactly. He'd been in since 2015.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, it was picking up, and falsehoods were not the main issue. Like, everybody knew he was lying, but it wasn't a broader issue. And so I'll give Ben credit. It's like, he looks like a pretty smart guy in retrospect of, you know, sort of pulling me away from Canada and saying, listen, man, you need to go back to what you were doing before, because it's really important.
What was it the first time you walked into the office?
Sure. Well, okay. So let me tell you,
yes.
I was at their party.
Yep.
I genuinely don't know how I ended up at your party. This launch party that BuzzFeed News had, where all of the people that we've mentioned so far were at that party, and I knew none of them. I was there mostly for the drinks.
He was being scouted, is what I can tell you now.
I go to this party, I meet some of these people, and then in the party, there's like these whispers of like, oh, BuzzFeed's going to be hiring. They're going to be hiring a few roles. One of them is another Buzz person, and then the other thing that they're going to be hiring is a social media editor. And I was like, well, I'm interested in that because that is what I do now, except I feel a little bit constrained using the TVO voice. TVO voice and my voice don't really mesh. I don't really sound a lot like The Agenda, you know? And so I apply, and I got an interview right away, and I bombed. And the reason I bombed is because I came into this interview, and among the list of many ideas that I had was, hey, you know what we should do is maybe we should have a Facebook page and also a Twitter page. And they were like, cool, man. But they already had one, and I just simply had just not sounded.
Imagine wow. You're interviewing for the social media editor job at BuzzFeed, and you don't see that they first
have
of all,
one.
You come to the belief that they don't have a Facebook page. How does that even happen?
You go, I should go look at their social media presence, don't find it, and then go, my brilliant idea is we should have one
you
of
guys
these.
Should be on Facebook. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So you know, it was brought up politely in the interview. He looked mortified, obviously. But you know, the whole thing with BuzzFeed and social news is like the voice part is really important because the voice that BuzzFeed used, particularly on Twitter, was unlike any other sort of brand, let alone news account that ever existed out there in a lot of ways. And it caused a lot of, you know, others to mimic it to great disappointment and still try. And so,
which is to say, like, you got to sound like a person, you got to sound sarcastic, you got to sound a little bit like what the platform already kind of sounds
not
like.
Not just this faceless goo of a you know, corporate brand or whatever. And so, you know, we believe that Alamein sort of had the voice. And when he talked about social and the dynamics of social, he understood what was going on. He'd had a piece that you'd written that went viral and you spent a lot of time thinking about why it went viral. And so all those things, you know, seemed like a fit. And so we were able to overlook that he seemed to be really bad at finding Facebook pages.
So obviously this was 2015 was very much the era of peak BuzzFeed when you started there. In between the first thing, the announcement that BuzzFeed would be expanding into Canada when that became public and the announcement that you'd be the editor, there was kind of like an epical thing published on The All, which you probably may remember, which The All was like a higher brow gawker founded by ex-gawker people. And there was this advice column published under the headline, I hate myself because I don't work for BuzzFeed. Now it reads like it must have been satirical, but it wasn't taken as satirical at the time.
I don't think it was satirical at the time at all.
Could you read this excerpt from it?
Sure. BuzzFeed is the most successful media company of our time. BuzzFeed is the future of the media business. BuzzFeed is the most widely recognized media brand among young people and will inevitably eclipse the major media organizations and one day become a super hegemonic media power, the likes of which we've never seen. They're past being just a website/media organization. They're a cultural institution. And BuzzFeed is in perpetual growth mode. They hardly ever fire anyone, save for an unlucky few, and are always making huge hires. Seems like every time I check an awesome person's Twitter bio, it's changed to staff writer at BuzzFeed or editor at BuzzFeed or whatever.
Yeah, and the person continued, no, I mean, this business is so this was an advice call, and the person was really distraught because they weren't working for BuzzFeed. And they said, you know, this business is so fucked up and I don't understand how anyone could say otherwise unless they work at BuzzFeed, where literally everything is perfect and the industry is in great shape because you get free shit, never get fired, traffic is always going up, and the money never ends. What was it like going into a place that had that reputation, and was that reputation justified to some extent?
It looked like at that point BuzzFeed had a lot figured out. Obviously, this is very over the top, but it looked like it had a viable business model. It was growing internationally. It had something to go with news, because news itself is typically not a great business. You got to bolt on some other things. And so, it felt tremendously exciting. It felt like those stock options I got might actually be worth something, which is, you're never supposed to think that. And that was wrong to think of, now we know. So, it felt like the classic, you know, it was a rocket ship. It was taking off. And I can tell you, when I first got there and saw the traffic of what we would get in Canada, and at the time what we were able to do was this thing where we could target a post that we had just published to all of the Canadians who had liked the main BuzzFeed page, the main BuzzFeed Facebook page. And I remember the first time I saw us do that, the analytics you could watch in real time just exploded in a way I'd never seen before. I had run websites before. I'd worked at places before. I'd never worked anywhere with that level of traffic. And I made some kind of sound that made the people in the office next to ours concerned for my health when I saw it happen. And so it just seemed like, yeah, this just massive machine and everything was going well. And you were getting in on something that was going in the right direction. It felt good on all of those levels. And especially the thing I identify with that excerpt is, yeah, you look around and it just seemed like it was carnage in the media business.
Yeah.
And this was one of the places that you could go and not only maybe be safe, but also you could have a level of freedom and do some fun and ambitious stuff that you probably couldn't do anywhere else. So it seemed great.
It's not just the freedom. It's also like there was kind of a built-in cultural capital in the sense of telling people you worked at BuzzFeed seems to buy you a certain amount of goodwill at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed to buy you, like, just the ability to be like, trust your judgment in some kind of way because you are a part of this machine that has something else figured out that we don't understand. And so other places would turn to you and be like, hey, will you speak to us about how we should do social media?
Right.
And because all we want is to figure out how to do this thing. Or will you speak to us on how we should do news? Because everyone was like, will we all become what BuzzFeed is doing?
I think I was a few months into the job and I got asked to come talk to a manager's retreat for Rogers Media.
Wow.
So yes, it felt like it was a bit of a magical time. And the weird thing for me is, you know, that's 2015 when I joined.
Yeah.
And I had been really blogging about the media and reporting on the media at that point for more than a decade. And so I felt like I had seen a lot come and go and somewhat cynical, but also could see what was real. And there's no question, like, I got swept up in the BuzzFeed mania at the time as well. There's no question of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that struck me from reading BuzzFeed News' culminating oral history of itself, published on the final day, was how it seemed like, I didn't realize how, at least in the States, how bacchanalian it had been. Like, it was like it wasn't like a more wholesome vice.
Yeah.
But it was still a lot of excess.
Oysters and lobster from the UK office. We didn't have that in Canada.
That's what I was
wondering. Some of that stuff and I was like, what?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean,
it was like, we just had a regular office, but also it's a cool and fun job, but that's pretty wild.
When I was out recruiting people to join BuzzFeed Canada for the news side, I could offer competitive pay, I could offer full benefits, I could offer stock options and health. And in so many other cases, the only other jobs that were maybe available to them would have been contract gigs for a year or whatever. And so that alone elevated us way above a lot of competing things.
I mean, you did have a capybara pool party.
Right?
We did.
But I don't think we paid for that.
No, I mean, probably not. I imagine it was a promotional thing from Wild Wild Exotic. I mean, I imagine every day was not capybara pool party day.
Right. No, it wasn't.
This sort of thing kind of captured, like,
this also captures that moment in time when everybody was trying to do Facebook Lives. You know, Facebook announced, like, Live is a big thing. They were incentivizing, meaning paying certain media organizations to do Facebook Lives. BuzzFeed, not the news part, I think, but BuzzFeed proper was paid for that.
Yeah.
And so we were doing lives all the time. You and I also did, do you remember the Facebook Live? Yeah, you and I did together. You remember that one?
I do.
What was it? Tell the people.
Did we apply makeup on each other or did someone else? Yes, right.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
Yes, we applied makeup on each other while talking about toxic masculinity in a Facebook
Live.
But this is the crazy thing, and it was so much fun, is we published serious journalism. We published investigative pieces. We had pieces that were finalists for CAJ Awards. We had a silver medal winning in the investigative category for National Magazine Awards from our first year, not even our first year. That was like the first 8 months or 6 months. And also, the editor-in-chief was getting makeup put on him on a Facebook Live talking about toxic masculinity and would write a piece about a dead raccoon in the street. And so you could just indulge whatever you wanted, and we could go high and we could go low. And yes, some people absolutely didn't like that and mocked us for it and whatever, but we were all super prepared for that. We knew.
But I never understood what they were mocking. Like, they were mocking our ability to just, like, get people to pay attention to something, because that's what was confusing to me. It's like, is this newsworthy? I guess if you're sort of work in an environment where the only thing that is newsworthy is when, like, an institution is like, hey, we've done this thing, and you go, okay, I'll go report this out very seriously. But for us, I think we were just sort of in the business of gaining and keeping people's attention. And sometimes that involved being like, hey, do you want to put makeup on each other and talk about masculinity for a minute? And it was great because people did stick with us for that.
There's people who liked that. There's people who would read the serious stuff. And that was, I think, one of the defining sort of views of it, is that the people who love the lists and quizzes would also read a serious news article. Mm-hmm. We all contain multitudes, and at any given moment, we may want the news article, we may want the quiz, we may be comfortable going from one to the other, or we may just want one or the other in that moment. But if you're offering all of that, then yes, your chances of holding someone's attention and keeping them coming back and maybe informing them or delighting them there's the opportunity.
What were some of the, like, in terms of actually the more news stories, what are some of the proudest things you published in that first year?
I'm very proud of the piece that Emma Loop did about the trauma suffered by drone operators in the Canadian military, which was
an incredible piece.
Finalist for a CAJ award and really difficult to...